This podcast is designed to help you understand the laws of our land. I am your host, Hattie Savari, and here to help you every step of the way, whether you are a tenant, landlord, parent, child, employee, employer, neighbour or business owner, and we are all most certainly consumers. The law is in your life every single day with over 180 episodes and 5 million downloads. Get ready to listen and empower yourself with tons of jargon-free legal information in plain and simple English. Today's episode is supported by Red Bar Law, the go-to law firm for expert, efficient and fast legal assistance, all at a fixed cost. Go to our website at redbarlaw.com. Hello and welcome back to our podcast at Get Legally Speaking. We are proud to be the UK's number one legal consumer podcast. Our legal conversation today will be on prosecuting the fake doctor, and I am joined by senior barrister Cameron Brown KC from Red Lion Chambers in London. In addition to his financial crime practice, Cameron sits as a tribunal chair on a number of regulatory bodies, including the Met Police Disciplinary Panel and the Health and Care Professions Council. Cameron is also in both the Legal 500 at Tier 1 and in Chambers and Partners. Cameron, thank you so much for joining me today.
Good morning, Hattie.
It's a pleasure to have you here. In 2020, Cameron prosecuted a man called John Andrews, who told staggering lies on his CV to become a top NHS boss. Those lies helped Andrews earn in excess of £1 million in 12 years, not just from the NHS job that he blagged his way into, but also from a number of charities he ran on the back of his prestigious position. Contrary to our beliefs that the little white CV lies are unnoticeable on CVs and therefore it is fine to put incorrect information onto a CV, this can land you in serious hot water. In fact, some lies on a CV can count as CV fraud, a crime punishable with large fines and even a prison sentence. In this episode, Cameron and I will be discussing how Andrews came into this high-profile position, how he got found out and prosecuted, and as always, much more in plain and simple English. Cameron, right. In 2004, John Andrews, who was a former builder, by the way, used a fake CV to secure a top job as chairman of the Royal Cornwall Hospitals NHS Trust, ahead of 117 candidates who applied for the same job. How on earth did this happen? How did he get a fake CV through that process, as he clearly didn't have any of the qualifications that he claimed to have had?
Well, he was very skilled, and I think it's fair to say that those interviewing him at the time didn't have copies of his, for example, degree certificates. Employers, I suppose, generally don't expect to see that sort of thing. And he filled out the application form and he got through a paper sift. And having got through the paper sift, he was then interviewed, in particular with one other individual who was, in fact, eminently qualified and did have the proper qualifications. But after an interview with a panel, he managed to persuade the panel that he was the man for the job.
It's extraordinary because it was reported that no one on the high-powered panel who conducted the two interviews with Andrews had any doubts that they'd chosen the right man for the job.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the case. He hadn't had any form of employment. He'd worked for a charity. He'd got a diploma certificate from the University of Bristol, but that was a long way from what the actual experience that he claimed to have had, and indeed the numerous degrees and other. And indeed, in due course, he in fact claimed he had a PhD. And when he came to make subsequent applications for further roles in the NHC, those lies were amplified and further bits of information were provided. And so he was somebody, I suppose, to be in fairness to the panel, who could clearly talk the talk. He was plainly convincing at this interview. He had some experience of working in organisations, but frankly, not the experience that they were looking for. And of course, one of the fundamental aspects of the job that he did was that he had to be somebody in whom they could place significant amounts of trust and confidence. And that was one of the documents that he signed, that there was nothing that would cause the trust any concern. As I'm sure many of your listeners, whatever you sign that thing, is there anything that you want to bring to our attention that would cause us any concern? And of course, he didn't bring any such matter to their attention. And unfortunately, they didn't check to his actual degree certificate. I don't think, to be fair to them, I'm not sure many employers would.
Yes.
And it was only after many years later that the subsequent chief executive carrying out investigations determined that he was not who he said he was in the sense of the qualifications that he had.
Well, he clearly could talk the talk because they described him, the panel described him as outstanding.
Yes.
But, you know, you're right. Many employers don't actually say, especially when we're in our the maturer stages of our lives, you know, sort of 35, 40 plus, oh, let's go back and check that your degree qualifications are what they are. Let's have a certificate on that. Let's go back to your A-levels or B-tech, whatever he would have done. But it just still astonishes me because I think surely to secure a job as the chairman of an NHS trust, of an NHS hospital, you got to have experience relevant to that. Do we know if he lied about any of his experience, his working experience?
Well, yes. I mean, the extent of that experience, I mean, the difficulty was that some of it was quite hard to verify because it obviously went back many years. But certainly what there was an aspect of controversy and dispute as to about the extent. He certainly had a little experience in working for a charity, but the case that we presented was it was not the extent of the experience that he made out that he actually had.
Right.
And certainly it was right to say that he didn't have any, for example, experience working in the professions he was going to go into working in terms of working in a senior role at an NHS trust.
Yes. Well, he worked for the NHS for some 12 years, and it wasn't until 2015 and 2016 that he was investigated.
Yes. And
he pretended to have a PhD. You've mentioned the PhD, and everyone called him, and he made everyone call him doctor, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
How was he ultimately found out? What happened?
Well, there was a dispute towards the end of his in 2016, and he left under something of the cloud, although not related to this. In terms of that subsequent conduct, it was proven in fact that there wasn't any substance behind it. But notwithstanding that, following that, the next chief of executive was not happy in terms of what took place towards the end of his term and carried out some further investigations. And in particular, contacting various bodies, including universities and various accountancy bodies. And of course, then the truth unraveled. And then a search was carried out on his premises and at least one fake document was found at his premises. And he was subsequently prosecuted.
Good gosh. So this all started, if I'm not mistaken, where he had an issue with his job.
Yes.
He left, did he? As a result of that? He actually left that post, the NHS
post. Yes.
A disgruntled employee who clearly was involved with some sort of investigation into what the issue was about in regards to why he left. So, well, let's just dig around a bit more. Let's see who he is and what he actually does. And thought, I'm going to look into your CV. I'm going to then call Bristol University, perhaps, and ask whether this PhD happened or not. And that it just unraveled from there, really. It sounds all very simple, but it was, I guess.
Yes, I mean, I think there was a number of things because he, in fact, as part of that PhD, had indicated he'd written a thesis, which she had asked to see. And then as a result of that, which she'd wanted to read this, that she'd carried out further inquiries and hadn't been able to locate his HR records relating to his employment application or indeed initially even a copy of the job description. And all that was located was a copy of an empty HR record file. She determined that he would have been the responsible, but the ultimate person responsible for that file. So subsequently, she then, as I say, she carried out some inquiries.
She wanted to know what he was about. I mean, she wasn't going to let this go, because it's one thing saying, you know what, we've had an issue with an employee, a member of staff, and they're moving on. And there's another one saying, I am going to investigate you. I'm going to go through your CV with a fine tooth comb, and I want backup to say you are, you know, everything you've got on there is correct. Wow.
Yes, absolutely. Wow. So, I mean,
talk us through what your views were of this case, and how you prosecuted and brought to light this scandalous act. What was he ultimately convicted for, and how long was his criminal sentence?
Well, he was convicted in relation to three counts on the indictment at Exeter Crown Court, of obtaining basically a fraud by deception, and representing the reason there were three counts. It represented the initial job that he got, and then further posts that he got. I think in some ways, I mean, I think it's very easy to look at this case and look at the people who were ultimately responsible for supervising him, for employing him, and then supervising him, to look at them and saying, you know, well, how silly are you that you weren't able to determine that you were dealing with somebody. But I think, as I said right at the start, this was someone who was very convincing. Mm. You know, effectively, he could talk the talk. And certainly, it's fair to say to him that some of his reviews over the years, he received positive reviews.
Well, I was just going to say, did he do a good job? Was that even discussed? And look, I know I wasn't qualified. I know I lied. Was it any part of his defence to do with that? I know I lied to get the job. I lied on my CV. I lied about qualifications. I lied about the extent of my experience. But in the job itself for these 12 years, did he actually do a good job?
Well, the position is the prosecution said no. He said, yes, I did. And here's the evidence, because I had these positive performance reviews. The reality is, in relation to a number of those performance reviews, he was the person who completed those performance
reviews. Oh, no, it gets worse.
And then they were signed off by those who had the supervising role.
But hold on, Karen. How can an individual prepare their performance reviews? What, that just alarm bells. I don't know, red flag.
Well, I think it's, I don't know, everyone has different experiences, but I think it's increasingly common that you're asked to set out your own review, and then that's discussed with those, and they see if they agree with that. They see if they agree with that or not. I think, you know, what is fair, what you could say in relation to Mr. Andrews, it was that it wasn't the case that the whole trust fell into immediate disaster. The prosecution's case was, there were a number of, he left some really quite substantial problems after his tenure, which didn't come out until after his tenure. But he would say, look, during the time that I was there, this wasn't a trust that fell into complete ruin while on my watch. So I think that there's some substance to suggest that, you know, that he wasn't somebody who had no idea at all. And I think the proof of putting that to the eating is that he was able to continue there for such a long period of time and obtain other positions of employment. But it wasn't the case the prosecution accepted that he did a good job. We, in fact, didn't agree with that. But that ultimately wasn't something that was ruled on by the job, because he accepted ultimately that he wasn't qualified to do the job that he said he could do.
So he did accept that. He didn't come and say, do you know what, hands up, I wasn't qualified to do that. I mean, the fact that it went on for 12 years is extraordinary. Yeah. Really is. But he must have been doing enough, clearly, to keep the job, right?
Yeah. Well, actually, nobody, whether that's down to a lack of rigorous supervisory individuals, you know, really enforcing, or whether he was convincing, who knows? But certainly, yes, he was able to continue in the job, as I say, for a number of years. And it was only as a result of his successor that his lies. And initially he was interviewed, and he initially maintained that he did have this PhD.
In the trial, he said,
in his interview,
for the job,
then, but then subsequently changed his mind about that and pleaded guilty.
For the interview in terms of the criminal investigation,
as far as that was concerned,
so
and then subsequently changed his mind and pleaded guilty. before any trial, on a basis, what we know, what we call a basis of plea, so setting out particular facts as he perceived them to be, including the fact that he alleged that he did a good job while he was there, but he accepted that he lied about his qualifications and experience.
And what was he ultimately convicted for? How long was his criminal sentence?
He was, as I think it's a matter of public record, as I say, he pleaded guilty to those three matters and received a custodial sentence. I would need to check the precise record. From recollection, I think it was 4 years, but I would need to check that. Yes. But certainly it was a relatively lengthy custodial sentence.
Yes.
But in addition to that, and this is what led to the Supreme Court case, was that the prosecution also pursued confiscation proceedings against him. They wanted his salary back.
Yes.
And that was then the subject of fairly contentious proceedings. And initially what happened was that the judge who dealt with sentencing agreed with the prosecution's position and said, yes, we were entitled to have the salary back. The Court of Appeal disagreed.
He kept some. He kept some, didn't he? Because they said, look, he did give service. But then that for me is massively contradictory, because the Fraud Act 2006 states a person is in breach of this section if he dishonestly makes a false representation and intends by making the representation to make a gain for himself or another, or to cause loss for another. He clearly dishonestly and admittedly dishonestly got the job. He earned the money through getting the job. But then it's my understanding that the Court of Appeal said, well, he can keep some of the money he earned because he did give service. Is that right, Cameron?
Yeah. So in essence, what the Court of Appeal said, that they said it wasn't proportionate, that in view of the fact that he had provided labour over this period of many years, that it wasn't proportionate at a later stage to say, well, notwithstanding that, that ultimately that it wasn't fair for the prosecution to have that money back. And it's quite an interesting concept, whether you think that somebody, our position was quite straightforward, that if you are somebody who is not entitled to work, you don't have the relevant qualifications, and your objective in lying is to obtain the money, the salary that you're ultimately being paid.
As the law states, right? That's called fraud, isn't it? Yes.
That's the whole purpose. It's, one might say, is it any different from someone carrying out, you know, a bank robbery? You have a vehicle, you might have you use a shotgun, you go in. Your objective ultimately is to get the monies from the bank. And here we say it's no different. Your yes. method of doing it is slightly different. You're not using a shotgun or a getaway car, but you're using the lies that you told in your CV. And ultimately, no one would say in relation to that bank robbery, well, you're entitled to keep the proceeds of that.
That is a brilliant example, Cameron, I have to say, because you're absolutely right. You can't say that he's the labour that he provided. In my view, I agree. In my view, he provided labour, so he should be able to keep some of the money that he obtained on the back of a fraudulent job application and lies that he admitted, you know, was the case. And he actually also admitted that he didn't do the job as well as it should have been done.
Yes. And I think, so then we went, and then the case was heard behind the Supreme Court, and they ultimately came to sort of what was a halfway house, but resulted in a favourable ruling for the prosecution, which ultimately meant that he wasn't entitled to keep the money. But in essence, they said, for example, if you are somebody who you lied, you're working as an airline pilot and you were a first officer and you lied about your experience to get the job as a captain on an airline, and you lied, you said, well, actually, I've got this X number of hours, flying hours, and you didn't, that extra salary that you got because you lied, you wouldn't be entitled. You wouldn't
the top-up element, actually what you weren't on the level that you said you were at, but you weren't.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so what they said is, if you lie and it results in an improvement in your position, then you're not entitled to keep the money. They also made sort of general remarks about the position as well, in terms of if you're prohibited as a matter of law from working. So, for example, if you pretend to be a surgeon, a neurological surgeon, for example, there are certain professions in which, as a matter of law, you're not entitled to do. then in those circumstances, again, you wouldn't be entitled to keep the money, because the point they were trying to make is, look, you could have been prosecuted individually in relation to that offence for working as a doctor, or I think you're prohibited, for example, work as an airline pilot if you're not qualified to do so. And there are a number of professions which cover this. So the ruling was quite extensive, and it was certainly the perception was, certainly from the prosecution side, that it was following the decision in the Court of Appeal, that it was a successful result. And certainly Mr. Andrews wasn't able to keep the monies from his lies, from his CV.
Yes. I mean, I think what makes this case, you know, you hear what's been written in the press, that he's a former builder. He insisted that people called him doctor. You know, he earned over £1 million. It just doesn't sit right at all, does it? And I mean, it does astound me how clearly he's an articulate person. Clearly he was able to talk his way, as you said and we've read, into this job. Why would you even do it? Why would you even go there and do something like this? But then who knows? Who knows what goes through people's minds?
Actually, I think that's right. And sometimes when you look at these cases, and I mean, obviously I deal with sort of quite sophisticated frauds. And you look at the effort that people put into these particular frauds, and you think, you're clearly somebody with a set of skills. You've used them completely inappropriately, but notwithstanding that, you know, if you'd used your skills, you know, in a legitimate way, you might have been someone who could have been quite successful.
Yes.
I think so far as, you know, Mr. Andrews was concerned, he was somebody, you know, in terms of insisting that everyone called him doctor, wholeheartedly embraced the role, that he had chosen to take.
He believed his own lies, yeah. Cameron. Yeah. I think that's what happens in life. I've seen it before where people are telling lies and you know they're telling lies, but they wholeheartedly believe that's you know, their lies, that's their world, they've created it, they live it, they breathe it. And who knows, perhaps a part of him felt, I deserve that, I'm working very hard for this job, I'm working very hard in this role, and I deserve to be called that. Who knows?
Yes, I mean, I'm sure initially he was probably pretty nervous when he started out, and thinking that he might be rumbled, but I suppose as the years went by, he became increasingly confident, and as I say, insisted to all staff that they referred to him, and so it's really as Dr. Andrews. So it really was very much, you know, getting into character in terms of the role that he described to himself. But it is. I mean, I suppose for me that he was able to get away for so many years with not, you know, people appreciating the fact actually he wasn't properly qualified to do the job that he said he was able to do, and that is, to echo what you were saying at the start, Hattie, I think, you know, there might be a perception that you can get away with a little white lies on the CV. And I think this is probably a case which is a bit of a rude reminder that actually, you know, you need to be careful that, you know, you can't get away with a little white lies.
Well, I think the lesson for the NHS is anybody that says, I've got these qualifications, you need to go and check that out. You have to call the institution from where the qualification was obtained. You need to do some background research, and, you know, any employer really, and just to double check who you're dealing with, because I think lots of people, it's astonishing, because I've got this 60-second TikTok video on can you tell lies on your CV, and it's a very, you know, it's had thousands of views, because people think, well, of course you can. Of course you can just tell a little white CV lie. But this is the hot water that it's got somebody in after many, many years that he probably thought he was in the safe zone, I think, after, you know, that many years. But
good 12 years. Gracious.
Yeah.
And I think also, I mean, I think it, you know, I think in terms of the lies that are told, I think there are, you know, there may be a lie to say you've worked at a, you know, in a supermarket before when you haven't. And then you go on to, you know, to get a job in a supermarket. And I think there are lies where potentially, I don't think, in terms of the dishonesty is still there. But in terms of the lies that, you know, of he told, in the end of getting a more senior role, you know, they were pretty substantial. But I don't think it makes a great deal of difference whether you tell the little small white lie to get the job in the supermarket, or whether you get, you know, you tell the big whopper, as it were, to get the huge job, because at the end of the day,
it's dishonesty.
And that's the point. I mean, I'm just looking at your certificate on your wall behind you.
Oh, wow.
They put you on the spot. But you
that,
know,
that is an award, actually. An award. So there we go.
There we go. But as I say, I think it's a rude reminder, not only of the dangers of CV fraud, but also not only are you at risk of a custodial sentence, but also all the monies that you've earned while you were working there.
Yes.
As a result, might be recovered by the prosecution as well.
And it's damage to reputation, isn't it? It's damage to your reputation. I mean, I'm sure he has obviously spent a lot of that £1 million to live off of that, perhaps paid his mortgage off or acquired assets. And, you know, your life, I think, completely and utterly changes in a very challenging and difficult way. You know, he clearly couldn't have stashed £1 million of his earnings. And what does he do when he gets out? What is he going to do? And what job can he get? And how can he continue his life? You know, it breaks up relationships if you've got children or, you know, or people around you who thought, I trusted you. It's a big risk, and I think one that completely and utterly should never be taken personally. I think honesty goes a long way and much further than the lies will ever go.
And it's not just that as well. It's also the people who don't get the jobs that you've lied.
Yes. I was just thinking that because you said at the beginning there was one other candidate who's being seriously considered. I wonder if he's picked up on what's happened to Dr. Andrews and thought, I could have been in that job, or look at that. Won't you look at that? I wonder if that person did.
That could have been me. And so it's not a victimless crime. And I mean, I think someone said, well, you know, where's the real harm here? But, you know, I mean, there are obviously instances where potentially people can do a lot of damage if they're not properly qualified. But also, as you say, it has, you know, reputational damage to the institutions involved, and indeed damage to those who didn't get the employment, who thought, you know, I've got a pretty good chance of getting this, and somebody else has come along and lied and got the job that, to be honest, you were well suited for. So there are, you know, it isn't a victimless crime. It's a serious crime. And, you know, which can have, you know, pretty bad consequences for others.
Indeed. Cameron, that's all we've got time for.
Thank you, Hattie. Lovely to see you again.
Thank you very, very much for your time today. Really appreciate it. Super interesting. And what I'll say to our listeners is don't forget to click and subscribe to our podcast. We have over 160 to choose from. And you can find us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and YouTube by searching Get Legally Speaking. Also visit our website at getlegallyspeaking.com. Thank you for listening.